Well, good morning. This is old home week for me, as you know. I was attending this fellowship, 42, 43 years ago. I taught Sunday school. How many of you were here then? Somebody told me they were here. There you are. Good to see you. Yeah, I had hair then, too. The theme I'm bringing you today is aging, the spirituality of aging, which would naturally occur at one's 40th college reunion, don't you think? So I decided to bring that to you. And before I do that, I just want to say how delighted I am. Roger has been a friend for decades, and what a wonderful minister you have. He was delighted that I could cover for him while he's in Puerto Rico this week, and I was delighted to be able to return here and enjoy all that. One thing you need to know about me before I preach this talk about aging is that I'm one of these aging athletes. In next April, I'm going to go across the country from 28 days on a bike. And I do a lot of serious biking. Dick and Denise Hayter in my congregation in Vero Beach know that I'm always on the bike, and you needed to know that for the sermon to make some sense. My reading this morning is called Spiritual Fitness. It's synonymous. If you Google spiritual fitness, this reading pops up. If you can start the day without caffeine or pep pills, if you can be cheerful or in ignoring aches and pains, if you can resist complaining and boring people with your troubles, if you can understand it when loved ones are too busy to give you time, if you can overlook it when people take things out on you, when through no fault of your own something goes wrong, if you can take criticism and blame without resentment, if you can face the world without lies and deceit, if you can conquer tension without medical help, if you can relax without liquor, if you can sleep without the aid of drugs, then you are probably a dog. Here ends the morning reading. Thank you. So it's in the middle of May in the year 2008, and I am in an orthopedist's office in Fort Smith, Arkansas, having made it more than halfway across the country on my bicycle, a 3,000-mile trip, 120 miles a day, waiting to see the doctor who is going to inject my badly arthritic knees with this stuff, this silicone, which is made of chicken combs, to help me finish the ride. One of the knees is now titanium, but at that time I was still working with both my original ones. Waiting to see the doctor in the waiting room, and I look down at the magazines, and there's a magazine with my name on it. Geezer Jock! Now, I had to make this up. This is a fake copy of Geezer Jock, because now it's an online magazine, and it's called Master Athlete. But I liked Geezer Jock much better. And I went online and started looking at the magazine, and there was an article about the guy my age who won Geezer Jock of the Year Award, and another retired guy who was paddling for prostate alone in a kayak from the St. Lawrence Seaway to Fort Lauderdale or some damn thing, and a third article proclaiming with absolute Geezer Jock certainty that Tiger Woods would not hit his stride as a golfer for another 3 decades. You know, in Geezer Jock magazine, we get to make up all kinds of stuff. Is this a great country or what? Surely you are all familiar with Ben Franklin's famous quote, "But in this world, nothing is certain but death and taxes." But that, of course, is not quite right. There is a third thing that is certain in life, and that, of course, is the inexorable process of aging. All of us, regardless of how young or old chronologically we are constantly, slowly, steadily aging. Every day. We pay taxes only once a year on April 15th. And for most of us, death is a pressing reality only at the very end of our lives. But every day we wake up, need I point out, we have to face the fact that we are inevitably and inexorably aging. Every day our minds and our bodies get older, and every one of us must cope continuously with the ramifications, both good and bad, which aging carries with it. And it matters, of course, that each one of us tries to age gracefully and well. Surely every last person in this room right now, regardless of your chronological age, hopes to age with dignity and grace, living as long as we can with just as much quality of life as is possible. Now, a lot of people I know are fatalistic about the aging process. Many folks believe that the key factor in aging, well, as the old saying goes, choose your parents well, which is a cute way of saying that it is one's familial genetics which play a foundational and significant role in your own personal aging process. I don't think you will find any expert in the field of human aging who will deny that one's genetics, the DNA cards you have been dealt by your parents and grandparents and other ancestors, that genetic card has a lot to say not only about how long you will live, but also about the quality of life that is possible for you. In every congregation I have served over the years, I have been able to watch and enjoy a handful of truly remarkable older members who age astoundingly graceful and well. We have a woman in my congregation now named Marion Wenzel, and everyone says, when I grow up, I want to be Marion Wenzel. Another of these folks is a 93-year-old woman named Sally, who is still teaching water aerobics at 93 to women in their 20s, 30s, and 40s. She was in my last congregation in Bethesda. And during a congregation I had with her about a year ago, I asked her, as I wondered how she lived so long and so well, she just happened to say to me, well, my 103-year-old sister in Washington State is still playing, you know, a competitive bridge. So genetics surely plays a part in longevity. Another example is Muriel Davies. Some of you may know the famous Unitarian minister, A. Powell Davies. Well, Muriel was the founding staff person of the last church I served, River Road in Bethesda. And she lived to be 104. She died last year, sharp as a tack, didn't miss anything till the very week she died. And she enjoyed remarkable independence, even over 100, at a assisted living facility in Gaithersburg, with intelligence and optimism and engagement that it amazed everyone. I called her up before I wrote this sermon, and I said to her last year, Muriel, how do you explain this? And she said, Scott, I have no idea, really. I'm just lucky. And I said, well, do you suppose, in addition to your genetics, that your optimistic and upbeat personality, your desire to be engaged with the world, do you suppose that has anything to do with it? And she said, Scott, I really have no idea. Which was a truthful statement. The truth is that while genetics is important, they actually have less to say about how we age than most people think. In a wonderful article in the Wall Street Journal last year entitled What Science Tells Us About Growing Older and Staying Healthy, staff reporter Tara Parker Pope did a comprehensive study of the recent scientific studies about people who age successfully. I quote from the beginning of her article. Today, the average person in the U.S. lives nearly 78 years. But what of those people who beat the average? Why do some men and some women defy the chronological odds and live longer and healthier lives? Increasingly, she writes, the scientific community is shifting its focus to this elite group, these successful agers, who seem to be doing a better job of getting older than the rest of us. What the scientists are finding is that each of us has much more control over how well and successfully we age than we like to think. I quote John W. Rowe, who is the director of the MacArthur Foundation Research on Successful Aging. Quote, people feel there is a genetic program they are playing out. But since only about, he says, one-third of aging is heritable, the key study, by the way, which was conducted in Sweden by twins who were separated at birth and grew apart so they could see what was inherited and what wasn't, only a third of it, the rest, he writes, is acquired. And that means that you are responsible for your old age, unquote. Numerous studies, he goes on, of rats, monkeys, nuns, and British government workers. There's a hell of a combination. Rats, monkeys, nuns, and British government workers have unlocked the secrets of successful aging. So what are the secrets? Well, it turns out, of course, that the most important components are not secrets at all. Right off the bat, there are several obvious and long-established things which are clearly under our control as individual persons, which help us age well. You all know the list. It's an insufferable one. It's the stuff we regularly and variously feel guilty of for failing to do entirely. We all know that if we want to have a chance to live long and well, we need to eat the right foods and in moderation. And, of course, if we drink alcohol, to also do that in moderation, to maintain healthy body weight, to exercise regularly, which many scientists assert is the single most important health habit that contributes to longevity. We must avoid smoking and harmful drugs. And, of course, last but not least, we've got to get plenty of sleep. Now, I know some of you don't want to hear this in church, but I would be remiss as my role in visiting spiritual leader if I did not tell you that in this community, the foundational importance of establishing good everyday lifestyle habits that are under our control and are proven beyond a doubt to enable us to be fit, alert, productive, healthy, and live longer as human beings. Just as it matters in UU congregations what we believe and what we value and morally uphold and how we treat one another and what we devote our lives to, these things are all naturally religious things. It also matters religiously that we practice good self-care. Let me put it this way. Our job as Unitarian Universalists is to be around in the world for as long and effectively as we reasonably can, contributing, leading purposeful lives, from our minds and our hearts in making the world a better and humane place. You know, Woody Allen says 80% of it is just showing up. That's the way it is for religious people. And we can't do that unless we take care of the physical bodies we have been given. In a word, we all have the responsibility, and it's a moral one, to be wise and disciplined stewards of these amazing, fragile, fleshy things that we all walk around in, so we can contribute to the world. So, as I've repeatedly preached to every congregation I have served, and some of my congregations hated my sermons like Jogging for Jesus, and it was a good sermon, but I'm going to spare you that one. If we're going to become the finest and most useful human beings we can, there can be no successful separation between our spiritual, our emotional, and our physical selves. It's all one incredible complex deal, this thing called human being. And so when we work at shaping our lives into all they can become, we must not, cannot ignore the body. You know, the old Cartesian dualism of Aristotle and Plato that said that the body and the spirit are separate things. This is a bad idea, this dualism. Now, of course, and this is actually a critical caveat and quite an unpleasant truth. Of course, no amount of proper self-care, eating, exercising, running, watching our weight, avoiding harmful substances, getting lots of restorative sleep, none of this can or will necessarily protect us from the many and most dire of random hazards of life. Everyone in this room knows wonderful, productive, healthy individuals who do almost everything right for their physical selves and still have their lives tragically cut short by random accident or illness. You know all the bumper sticker, exercise, live right, and then die. And that is true. It can happen. No amount of right and careful or disciplined living will necessarily protect you from early death. Car accidents, crime, cancer, neurological and vascular diseases like ALS, Parkinson's, aneurysms, Alzheimer's, to name just a few twists of physical fate that do not care how well you care for yourself. This world is full, as you know, of tragedies and diseases that will prevent many of us from living a long, robust life that we might dream of. At the same time, several experts on human aging have recently suggested, I'm not sure I would go this far, but there are writers who say that if nothing goes wrong, a person could expect to live to 120. But the truth is that things, hello, do go wrong. Something will go wrong. It's just simply the luck of the cards, much of it. But that said, the overall point here about successful aging is that each one of us is fiercely responsible to be a steward of the self. And that cannot be avoided. That's an ethical responsibility, as well as a good thing to do. But this is not, I promise you, just going to be a Jack LaLanne kind of sermon. By the way, Jack LaLanne, he died, this year at 97. His favorite saying, Jack LaLanne, exercise is king, diet is the queen, together they make the kingdom. I like the quote. Yes, good physical self-care is crucial. But it turns out that there are a couple other crucial things beyond good physical care that we can do for ourselves that will enable us to live healthier and longer. What a whole host of recent medical studies have discovered is that the most significant enemy of old age is not necessarily being sedentary or overweight, but in fact it is stress. Unremitting, unresolved, undissipated stress. It is stress, particularly stress which we do not shed or resolve, that ends up taking, the experts say, years off of our lives. I quote again from the Wall Street article. How much stress we face in a lifetime and how well we cope with it, and that's the key, is one of the most significant factors, this article says, in predicting how well we age. Unremitting stress in a person who cannot shed it leaves the stress response that protects us in moments of danger, like that flight or fight thing if we meet a tiger on a path. It leaves that response on all the time. And all those physical changes that protect you in a moment of crisis, like when you're staring down a tiger, elevated heart rate, blood pressure, all kinds of chemical changes in the body, turn on you and take a dramatic toll on your body and your immune system. And then the article says the healthiest agers are particularly adept at shedding stress. Now, all of us, of course, regularly experience stress in our lives, and there is no such thing as stress-free living. And there's nothing wrong with having a career. If you're a brain surgeon, I hope you have a stressful time at the office, okay? As many studies have revealed, normal day-to-day stress by itself is not detrimental necessarily to health. But what is deadly is not having in your life the mechanisms and modalities and habits in your life that allow you to relieve it, to release it, to let it go, to manage it, to shed it in ways that allow you to relax. People who age well have learned how to dissipate the natural stress and tension in their lives. Now, I'm sure there are a whole lot of ways that you can shed stress. I just want to share four that I have. My first, by far the most important, is regular exercise. I get out on my bicycle every day. I commute to work. I commute home. I regularly take little bike breaks if I can, as my professional life allows. A good physical, and I ran before that, 13 miles a day for 25 years, 7 days a week, which is why I have a titanium knee. A good physical workout every day, in fact, helps you to work out all of that tension you need to get rid of. You know, I can be working really hard and 2 o'clock, I can at the desk, I can just tell I need a break. I come back from a fast hour bike ride, I'm ready to work again. My mind is clearer. I've written 3 sermons in the hour in my head. By the way, did you all know that the World Health Organization recently reported that the simple act of regularly riding a bicycle, and I know you can't do that in the winter here, like a majority of the people in Denmark do, reduces one's mortality rate by 40%. And we'll add, on average, the World Health Organization says, 20 years to your life. Bike riding or other forms of exerted exercise, as simply walking each day or swimming a fast couple of miles, is the greatest stress reducer and life-enhancing technique known to humanity. And for me, it's crucial. I'd be a miserable person without that stress reducer of exercise. My second secret to personal stress reduction is the simple practice of regularly getting enough sleep. You've probably all read that Americans are the most sleep-deprived people in the world, and we're getting worse about this. They now say you need at least 8 hours of sleep, not 7, and you're teenagers. If they don't get 8 or 9, they're going to be teenagers are teenagers, but they need a lot more sleep than they're getting. We are getting less and less. And I, for one, have given up the 11 o'clock news. I know you have 10 o'clock news here. How sensible. But out east, it's always 11, except for Fox, which is an hour early. I've given up the 11 o'clock news. Jay Leno. Forget it. I'm not seeing him. Sleep. So simple. You just have to do it. It's crucial to health. And I get a lot of sleep. Third, I shed stress and maintain a balance in my life by maintaining a separation between my work and my home. I do not work at home. I go to church to work. And I do not check my office email 12 times a day. Yes, I have a BlackBerry, and yes, I look at it, and yes, I looked at it this morning at 6 o'clock. But I know how to separate my life. And let's just talk a little bit about social media and other things. There's nothing wrong. In fact, it's very important that you learn how to get away from some of this stuff to reduce stress. You shouldn't be working and checking whether your friends have had eggs for breakfast constantly. Our transcendentalist forebears knew this. Have an original relationship with the world. You can't do that if your nose is buried in a BlackBerry. Stress reduction, you need to give work and social interaction a rest, to have a relationship with yourself. And fourth, I manage my stress by maintaining a strong network of family and friends. A number of longevity studies point to family and friends as being crucial to aging. And I'll say a little bit more about that in a moment. And of course, if you're lucky enough to have a spouse, mine of 30 years now, that's the most supportive thing. But of course, you don't need a spouse or a partner to lead a long and happy life and to have a network of friends and family. But these things are a crucial element of this network, crucial. And all of us need to regularly cultivate such networks and refuse to live alone in isolation, in spiritual isolation. You can live alone in a house. You just can't live alone in the world. So these are my stress reducers. What about you? You know, what techniques, what things do you use? Ballroom dancing? Walking the dog around the neighborhood 6 times a day? Taking yoga? Gardening? Cooking? Knitting? Stamp collection? Playing in a rock band? Participating in a book discussion group, taking an afternoon nap, attending a concert, swimming laps in the pool. These are all stress reducers. Take your pick, but make sure that you pick. As I have already mentioned, and now it's getting warm in here, and I'm not embarrassed about peeling off a jacket. As I have already mentioned, recent studies suggest that men and women who age well have spent a lifetime building a close and caring connection with other human beings. They are bound into a personal network of love and care and reciprocity and interaction. Again, the Wall Street article. Successful agers are not loners. People who age well tend to be close to extended family, have a strong network of friends and other social relationships. Study after study, the Wall Street Journal says, has shown that active relationships with family and friends translates into emotional support, which makes an important difference in your ability to achieve old age. In a recent New York Times article about successful aging, a woman from Manhattan, Esther Tuttle, who's booming along at 102, is described, quote, an extrovert who has many friends, a healthy dose of self-esteem, and strong ties to her family and community. She continues to enjoy her youthful passions for the theater and opera, and like centenarians who thrive, Esther has an extensive social network and works to maintain her ties to family and friends. This may not be good news for those of you yearning for an early retirement, but another recent study just this month said that many people who retire early die early because the retirement has meant that they withdraw and they loosen their bonds and their connectedness to the community. The Japanese call an engaged and purposeful life after retirement ikigai, which means the reason for which I wake up in the morning. Meaningful engagement in the world and meaningful engagement with family and friends is crucial to aging well. And study after study reports that one of the best places to maintain these networks are religious congregations. Here's my sales pitch. Hey, I've been doing churches for 40 years. The prestigious National Institute for Healthcare Research has determined that participation in a congregation increases men's longevity by a whopping 30% and women's by 60%. Another study more modestly concludes that going to church will increase your lifespan by 25%. And yet another, even more cautious study says that on average, being a member of a church adds 3.1 years to your life. Now, how do they figure stuff like that out? Statistics can do anything. Whatever the percentage the data is in, being part of a caring social community like a church or any other type of organization where you relate to people and engage the world really helps you shed anxiety and keeps you young. The good news for religious organizations aside, the broader point here is that to lead a long and healthy life, you have to be engaged purposefully with work and family and friends and retirement and volunteering. It's crucial. And if you look at our seven principles, the seven principles of Unitarian Universalism, every one of them, from the inherent worth and dignity of persons to justice and equity and seeking the world, every one of our principles, the interdependent web, calls us into relationship, calls us into engagement. We are a religion not of withdrawal, but of engagement. So our principles tie right into aging well. Follow the principles. You're going to be all set. The simple truth is that being a part of this congregation is helping all of you. And I'm not allowed to make this stuff up. I have to tell the truth. And this brings me to the last key factors that the social scientists have identified for successful aging. In a major study of hundreds of retired Roman Catholic nuns who all eat the same and live in the same kinds of places, and that's that study mentioned earlier with the rats and the monkeys, sisters who all shared virtually identical living conditions, diet, housing, level of social interaction, the nuns who aged the best were ones blessed with three things: optimistic personalities, a healthy sense of humor, and this is the most crucial, the ability and willingness to adapt to new circumstances, to new information, welcome or unwelcome, in their lives, to roll with the punches, if you will. For example, the nun who no longer can walk but must be in a wheelchair is the nun, the successful one, says, "Now what?" Doesn't say, "Oh, poor me." Says, "Now what? How am I going to live forward from here?" It's the adapters who do best. Study after study, adaptability is the key piece of aging. Now, one might argue that human qualities like an optimistic personality, a sense of humor, the ability to adapt to new information, to roll with the punches, may not be entirely under our control as exercise and diet are. In fact, I'm pretty sure that while each one of us has some measure of control over our moods and reactions, our basic personalities are pretty much set at birth. In case you haven't noticed, I'm a rather cheerful guy. I'm a kind of a sunny kind of guy. My spouse finds this very irritating at 6:30 in the morning. And let me tell you how this plays out. We were recently cycling on Cape Cod, the beautiful Cape Cod Trail. Have you ever done that? And I'm cycling along. It's a day like this, absolutely gorgeous. And I see on the pavement in front of me, "Smile." And I said, "Look, Collins, somebody wrote 'smile' in the middle of this trail." He said, "That's not 'smile', that's 5 mile. You see, optimists see all kinds of things that aren't there. "That's not smile." It helps me. I'm going to live a long time unless I die first. Well, we're just about half an hour older than we were when we started together on this topic. Life is short, so I'm going to summarize, wrap things up. Scientists are telling us that there are a number of diverse and in some cases interlocking factors which enable us to age well and live long. Good genetics, it plays a role. Choose your parents well. So does good diet, weight control, regular exercise. They're now saying an hour a day, every day. Getting plenty of sleep, knowing how to handle stress, and cultivating a strong network of family and friends, and last but not least, being optimistic, having a sense of humor about your life, and asking what next when unpleasant information comes, when you have these necessary losses, be an adapter. And don't stick with what was or bemoan what you've lost. There's a famous quote from Camus: "What does it matter what we have lost when what we have lost is not yet used up?" Again, we can't control all of the things that will come to us as we age. But the good news is that we have a lot to say. A lot to say. A great deal of control over how we age. And so I close by simply saying, do the best you can. Getting old, as Betty Davis said, getting old is not for sissies. And anyone who tells you it's going to be a cakewalk is wrong. But as the years and decades go by, and we must all face increasing complications and challenges, especially from our bodies, some of which may greatly diminish us and break our hearts at first, we must simply look ahead. What I would spiritually remind you is that we are not helpless victims, even as we face losses. We each have a lot to say about how we will do. So no matter how old you are now, my dear friends, get out there and live long and well. Long and well.
Amen.